the Personnel, Legislative, and Public Affairs Subcommittee meeting for January 12, 2021, 4 o'clock p.m. We'll start with the Open Meetings Act. Posted on the back board, a copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Fowler.
Here.
Jack.
Here.
McCormick.
Here.
Lipinski.
Here.
Jefferson.
Here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
We got a motion and a second. Roll call.
Yes. Jack?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Lipinski?
Yes.
Jefferson?
Aye. Item number five, proof of publication of meeting. You don't have proof of to this afternoon's meeting of the World Herald, publication in the World Herald, and become part of the permanent record. Item number six, review and recommendation of district's affirmative action policy for 2021. Tracy Thompson and Kelly LeSure Barrett.
Good afternoon. Is my microphone on? Okay. Good afternoon, directors. My name is Tracy Thompson, and I'm the district secretary and HR assistant for the NRD. As chairperson said, we're joined by Kelly Lawrence. She's our legal counsel from Baird Holm, who guides us through our affirmative action policy. So for your consideration today is the review and recommendation of the district's 2021 affirmative action policy. There's no major changes in this proposed policy over last year. So my memo's up on the board. I'll just review some of the actions that were taken this last year. So the way this happens is in December of 2020, Baird Holm reviews our affirmative action program. We currently employ 47 full-time, 2 temporary full-time, 2 permanent part-time, and 2 seasonal employees. And since we receive more than $50,000 in federal funding, that requires us to have an affirmative action policy in place. The copy of the affirmative action policy, which includes the policy for disabled and veterans and the program for women and minorities, is also attached for your review. And we won't go through the screen. It's a lot of pages. If you have any questions, we can go over it. So the actions that we took in 2020 to remain in compliance with this policy include a letter that we mailed to all of our subcontractors and suppliers in May. It states that we have affirmative action. We expect them to have affirmative action policy as well. We display all our posters in all district offices. Twice a year, we send a letter to management regarding our affirmative action obligations to remind managers to keep those at the top of their mind in hiring and contracts. Every year, we file a VETS 4212 employment report, and that tells the federal government how many veterans we have on staff, who's been hired for the year. And every 5 years, we also invite all district personnel to self-identify as individuals with disabilities. And as a result of that survey, there were no accommodations requested. The biggest thing we had happen this last year was our employment. So we continue to advertise all our positions through Nebraska Works, which if you're an old-timer like me, it used to be called the Job Service, the Nebraska Vocational Rehab Office, our website, the NARD website, and the local newspaper of the servicing community where the position is being filled. And that fulfills our affirmative action policy. So part of that, with our jobs, we document that because we have to document everything we do in our outreach table. And if you could scroll to page 3, go past that to page 3. And that's this page right here. So what we do with, and this is kind of new in the last couple years, so we document every activity we do, and this past year it was all job postings. We didn't have any job fairs or anything, or recruiting events or anything like that. So we have our job postings, the dates we do that, the description. So, for example, for the World Herald, that's a paid ad to reach the greatest number of job seekers in this geographical area. And as part of the World Herald, they also include online programs such as Glassdoor and Indeed. So we're reaching a pretty wide range of people with that. Then we evaluate. So I go through and I see where the applications came from, mark it down. So like for the World Herald, we had 25 applicants out of those six jobs indicated that that was their job search source. And then we conclude, yep, we're going to continue that. So if you see everything we did to put jobs out into the public, we document, and we're going to continue using all of the resources that are listed here. They don't all give us results every time, but we're going to keep them for those specialized times. So in regard to the jobs, if you go back to page 2, please. So we had a big year in job postings here at the NRD. We had 10 different events and one retirement. And I'm just going to summarize. I won't go through the whole list and say all the positions. I just want to summarize that we had 4 promotions occur from within the district, and 2 of those promotions were veterans. So out of those 4 promotions within the district, 3 staff members left district employment, and that resulted in 3 other employees being promoted to those positions. 1 was a veteran. We had 1 promotion due to another employee being promoted. So it's kind of a, you know, domino effect. And that person was a veteran as well. So then we had 4 new full-time members hired by the district. 1 was the 319 grant position that we just had. Our NACD grant-sponsored position that we hired back in August of, I believe, 2019, left for an NRCS job in January of 2020. So that was replaced, and that person will fulfill the rest of that grant term. We had 1 new hire due to the promotion of a current staff member, and that was a veteran. And we had 1 new hire due to a staff member leaving district employment. Then we had 2 part-time seasonal employees hired by the district, and those were both new people to the district. They had not worked for us before. And we had 1 retirement, which position is currently vacant. So after all that, our veteran numbers have gone up. We have 5 now, which is, according to Baird Holmes' evaluation of our veteran data, our district veteran hire promotion rate is 27.3%, which is a lot higher than what the benchmark of about 6% is. So, given all that, staff recommends that the subcommittee recommends to the Board of Directors that the Papio Missouri River NRD's affirmative action policy for 2021 be adopted and incorporated to the district policy manual.
We can have a motion on this item.
I'll move for staff recommendation.
I'll second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Japp?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes the personnel. Thank you. The lady behind you, how do you pronounce her last name? I'm sure I...
It's pronounced Lawrence.
Lawrence. Nice of you to come.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to the Programs Projects Operations Subcommittee meeting, January 12, 2021. The same Open Meetings Act still applies. Quorum call.
Fowler?
Here.
Japp?
Here.
Sapinski?
Here.
Fowler?
Here.
Chairperson?
Here. Adoption of agenda, item number 4.
So, second.
Roll call.
Japp?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Aye. Item number 6, review and recommendation on updates to district policy manual, Appendix H, rules and regulations, rural water supply system, Sag Nelson.
Good afternoon. Typically, at the end of the year, first part of the year here in January, we take a look at the district's policy manual, including the rules and regulations for the rural water systems. So included in your packet is a redlined version Most of the updates are just housekeeping issues, kind of changing acronyms or dates on it. The only major item is there's a state statute that was passed this last fall that's now gone into effect as far as notification for discontinuing water service. So you'll find that language in there. It just shows the requirements for how a letter must be sent out, and upon receipt of that letter, we can't shut off water service until 7 days after the receipt of that letter. So unfortunately, that is a state statute we have to apply to.
Okay, and we can have a motion.
So moved.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Director Bagley and then Director Jett.
Do they have any moratorium during holidays or cold or hot that they don't disconnect services?
Typically, we try to, make contact with the homeowner and give them proper notification, obviously, like during the middle of a snowstorm, or we won't do it like on Fridays before a long weekend or during a major heat event or cold event. The list that we typically get, unfortunately, it's usually habitual customers. I mean, a lot of times we know the names pretty regularly. So we try to work out payment plans with them, or we try to encourage them to use our online bill pay system where they can use a credit card too. But we're pretty cognizant of not shutting someone off like on a 100-degree day or things like that. Try to use reason.
Do you require the full amount when you go to the door? Do you make arrangements and negotiate with them when you get there? You have latitude?
Typically, I mean, if it comes to that, we're requesting a money order, or that they pay in cash or pay online with the credit card. We do have the discretion to kind of work out a payment plan with someone if, occasionally you have someone who had a faucet or something break and they have an exorbitant, a large bill just as a result of that.
Thanks.
Yep.
How common is it to shut somebody's water off? I mean, how many instances of that were there this past year?
Usually it's the same kind of three or four people. I would say it's maybe we have to usually threaten them that we're going to shut it off, send the letter, and then usually it's them coming in at the 11th hour to make payment. I mean, it's fairly rare, usually maybe two or three a month, if that. And keeping in mind, we have between all the three rural water systems, we have about 2,000 customers.
Thank you.
Director Brandon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess along these lines, what about pandemic? Because the pandemic's been hard on lots of people and perhaps customers.
Yeah, so we've kind of followed MUDs and OPPDs policies. I know there was a period of time where I believe it was like March through June where MUD wasn't disconnecting service. We typically just follow in line with what they're doing.
Any other questions? Roll call. Thanks, Zach.
Smitsky?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Aye.
And I just want to take this opportunity to thank the board of directors and thank the staff here. This will be my last subcommittee meeting. I've been with the district now almost 8 years. I have nothing but the utmost respect for John, Marlin, my rural water staff, and all the rest of the staff. It's been great place to work. Unfortunately, I'm to a point where I kind of need to move on. So thank you for everything you've allowed me to do, and thank you for kind of fighting the good fight. So
thank you for your service also.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 7, review and recommendation on purchase of additional land at Blair Field Office. Justin Novak and Kyle Wynn.
Good evening, guys.
Good evening.
It looks like we got a couple new faces in here and a renew face, so welcome back. My name is Justin Novak. I'm the field representative / building manager of the Blair Field Office in Washington County. This is Kyle Wynn, our new rural water superintendent for the Washington County system. About 6 months you've been up there now.
Yep.
So he's been a great addition for Zach's staff after we lost a couple people in the last year or two. So. Do you want to go ahead and go to the map for me, Bill, or Wyatt? Okay. So for some of the new people that really aren't familiar, you know, the Papio NRD actually has a couple of field offices as well, one in Washington County in Blair, and one in Dakota City in Dakota County. And the Blair field office is pictured right here in the kind of southeast corner of that beam field. We've been there now for approximately 9 years, a little over, and we've experienced tremendous growth in the last 9 years. Since I started in that job, we started with about probably 10 or 12 people in that office, and now we're up to about 20. Our office is quite full between the Farm Service Agency and the Natural Resource Conservation Service. Our parking lot, as you can see, is, well, that's just employee vehicles in that aerial image, and our NRCS trucks on the west side there. So one thing we've been looking at is the possible expansion of our office. And really what's kind of driven this bus lately for us is on the south side across Wilbur Street there, Dollar General is actually building a 950,000 square foot distribution center that's going to house about 300 to 400 employees. So there's tremendous growth that's going on around our office as we speak. And the lots that are currently for sale around our office as well. The city of Blair currently owns those, and I'm speaking with Rod Storm, the city administrator. They've had a ton of interest in these lots, so it's kind of a crunch time that we're in if we're ever going to look to expand our operations. And one thing that I personally don't have as a field representative and to manage our conservation programs in Washington County is a tree cooler. We have a tremendous tree program that we provide to our constituents, but we don't really have a main facility to house that program out of. The only thing we have is a reefer trailer over here in this shop, which is minimal at best, just to basically store trees. but with our program, we actually partner with the Lower Elkhorn NRD, and they get the main shipment of all the trees in. They basically take all our orders and distribute, you know, they sort them all out, and then we go and pick up our trees from them. Thankfully, they do that because if we didn't have them doing that, we would never have a facility large enough to manage that program. So we're kind of, you know, at the mercy of them a little bit, but luckily our partnership's pretty strong. I don't foresee that changing, but it's a possibility. So one thing I would love to see is a tree cooler in our Blair office, which is our main hub for our program, that we don't really have a facility to build. And I think Kyle can speak to how the rural water has really grown this last year, and Zach could tell you this as well. They're adding customers by the week and multiple at that. So we are really experiencing a lot of growth. Those are some of my needs as a building manager and as a tree program manager. And I think Kyle can kind of elaborate on some of his things.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Kyle Wynn. Like Justin said, I'm the superintendent for Washington County Rural Water. We currently have no storage space really for any supplies or anything like that for emergencies or meter pit installations. Right now we are storing all our meter pits inside the pump house, which kind of gets in the way of valves and everything else that we need to work on in the pump house. We currently have no pipe supply, no equipment to do any emergency stuff. We have to rely on the contractors for that. So we're kind of at the point where we want to expand and start doing some of our own work, kind of like Dakota and Thurston counties. We have a small storage area in the Blair office, which is basically a 16th of the two-car garage. So that's why we're kind of looking into expanding. So appreciate your guys' support. You guys got any questions for me?
Thank you.
No.
One other thing I would note, you know, this deal is really contingent upon the growth of the rural water system. Like Kyle mentioned, when there's a water main break, we have to call a contractor. They come out and repair it. When they get there is when they get there. When you have the northern systems in Thurston, Dakota County, when that water main breaks, they go to their shop, they grab their mini hoe, they grab their skid steer, they grab the supplies they need, they go out and fix it right away. We don't have that ability on the Washington County Rural Water System that has almost 1,200 constituents living on the system, plus the city of Fort Calhoun, plus the Lakeland Estates community. And that's not the 1,200. So there's a lot of people that are relying upon this system. And sometimes when those things happen, time is of the essence. And we don't have that ability right now. And so that's really what his foresight is, and more my foresight is to the, you know, eventual expansion in the building of that shop. We're, you know, we're not asking today to get the shop. We're just looking to kind of get the property secured before it sells, because I don't think it's if it's going to sell, it's just how quick it does. So
you had a director Jack.
I had several questions. Who owns the current building? Do we own that, or are we sharing it? We're sharing it, obviously.
We own the building.
We own the whole thing.
And we lease it to NRCS.
Okay, they pay us rent, essentially.
Yep.
And did that land just come up for sale?
It's been up for sale about 6 months to a year.
Do you have any idea?
It's always been kind of for sale, but kind of not.
Well, yeah, but right price, right? Do you have any idea how much Dollar General paid per acre for theirs?
I have no idea, but it had to be a pretty good sum because the guy had to go out there and chop his 100 acres just so they could do geotechnical.
Okay, and this is like 1. What was it?
It's 1.8 acres.
1.8 acres. That's like $55,000. It's hard to believe something in Blair, Nebraska, sells for $55,000 an acre. I guess.
So there is appraisal, and the appraisal was. And if we want to talk about specifics, we'll have to go to an executive session. But the appraisal was very favorable to us.
Okay. I mean, obviously, it's a perfect position.
Yeah.
You can't get anything better than that. Does Blair also own that land behind you?
Yes, they own basically both tracts of land. One thing I can say is I know when we built that office 12 years ago, or purchased the property 12 years ago, the land that we have our facility on, we paid $100,000 for.
This current land?
Currently. That's what we paid 12 years ago, was $100,000.
Really? That's a heck of a deal, then. Also, one more thing. Have you talked to the other agencies within that building, and what are their expansion plans?
They're tripping over themselves for us to build a shop, because I've actually spoke with Andy Bonenkamp, the DC for the NRCS,
right.
And they store all those UTVs and all that stuff sits outside and just
literally rots away. Work out at the Y every day there. So.
Actually, they're willing to pay us rental space to store those inside. So they would actually pay to put their UTVs inside of our shop. So it's another way that we could recoup some revenue dollars, just like we do with the leasing of our offices to those agencies as well.
We can have a motion on this item.
Question, Jim?
No, go ahead.
What is it? Motion to approve? Okay. We have a second for it.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Now the rest of the directors. Questions?
Yep. Okay. Yep. This is about doubles the space that we have. And when we built this building, we didn't have any storage. Terry Schumacher was storing stuff on his land. Now, that's all been moved in, or is Terry still stashing
stuff? We're still stashing stuff every crappy
crevice
we can find, Jim. You know, it's kind of like when you build a shop. You're like, well, I need a 30 by 50, and you build it, and you're like, man, I needed 100 by 200.
Okay.
You know, and that's just how it is. You can never build a shop or an office too big. Washington County has just grown tremendously as a whole, and the NRCS is adding more staff. The NRD has added more staff. The FSA has added more staff. And the rural water, I think the rural water is really the reason that we need this the most, personally.
So
our actions
tonight just acquire the property.
Correct.
And future action, which is probably a long-term goal, is to build a building, a shed like we have here, a gravel parking lot, asphalt parking lot. What are you envisioning?
You know, I envision probably minimal concrete, you know, because obviously gravel becomes a nightmare when you go to plow snow. Every time you plow snow, the stuff pushes up into piles. We could look at asphalt. Obviously, we'll look at any alternatives that were under the guidance of probably an architect of what they would think. But definitely, I'll be back here asking you for more. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I suppose you will. right now, you said it's a bean field, so the city of Blair is leasing this farmland?
I don't think they lease it. I think it's just somebody that wants to farm it. So I think, as far as my understanding is, it's just a gentleman's agreement. You farm it. It keeps the weeds down. Basically, they don't have to keep the weeds down that way.
So part of our analysis is, will we lease this, or will we shake hands with some farmer and give him a break? We haven't gotten there yet, but
yeah.
I can see from this aerial that there's some – until we get a plan together and approve a building or parking lot or whatever, what's our plan for that space?
You know – go ahead.
We can make that determination when we acquire it, then we'll work with the whoever currently is acquiring it. I mean, we'll have to make sure that it follows our procedures and state law. I don't know if we can just do a wink and a nod and without some type of agreement.
Well, I would prefer we not do a wink.
So that may change whoever's using it now, but maybe we can let them use it for a year or 2 years or something. So we'll bring that back as we work through those specifics.
I mean, you could do things as like seed an annual cover crop or grasses just to kind of get us to that point, or let them farm it. I'm okay with that, too.
Christmas trees.
Then we can generate more revenue, Jen. That's the thing.
And Dollar General is going on the east side?
It'd be the southeast corner. Catty Corner.
Is there a
corner up here?
All right.
Yeah, right there. That whole south field and kind of that whole they told me there's going to be 55 acres of concrete poured.
Wow.
Between the warehouse and the parking lot, they said that's how much concrete will be over there.
Well,
basically that the corner of 10th and Wilbur is where they've got their construction trailers parked right there. Yep, that whole area to the south, and their construction trailers are parked across the street.
I remember the old cinder block building there a few blocks away, and when we built this, it was wonderful and still is.
That office is, everybody that comes in that office just rants and raves on how nice of a building that is.
Well, it's just to do with your effort, but...
No, I'm just saying,
in general,
as a USDA office, because if you've been to many USDA offices, they're literally tin sheds. So, I mean, this is a really nice facility.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that, we didn't know 12 years ago how big we were going to be, so this is just kind of natural, so I think I support this.
Any other directors got questions? Director Jeff?
I support it too. I'd like to see the FSA and the NRCS and the NRDs be in the same building, essentially, because they have like-minded goals for each other.
We have a
lot of things they do together. They share an awful lot of things, so it'd be nice to keep them all together. I would hate to see the NRCS or FSA continue to grow and find that space is not big enough and then have them move out and go someplace else.
Yeah. That's happened to us.
Right.
That has happened in our Dakota City office. We have a great relationship with those agencies, and, we talk about partnerships. It couldn't be a better partnership with that office. Andy Bonenkamp is a great DC. He just brings a lot of cohesion to that office, and there's just great people in there, so we want to keep them for sure.
Any other directors? Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Pinsky?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you, directors.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Item number 8, review and recommendation on Platte River Bridge Trail Project Amendment to the Professional Service Agreement with Shimmer. Eric Williams.
Good afternoon, everyone. The district has been working on the trail bridge between Bellevue and Plattsmith along the east side of the Highway 3475 roadway bridge. Wyatt, the first page is a map. As a reminder, this is from Allied Road at the north to Beach Road at the south. In the original scoping of the consultant services for Shimmer, we had identified some design elements that were necessary, but during the 30% plans, we identified two additional items that were not included originally. Wyatt, if you can scroll down just a little bit. On the south side, just to the left of where it says Beach Road, there's a small detention pond that catches water, which runs from a gutter off of the east side and runs south off of the road bridge itself. That's part of an agreement between Nebraska Department of Transportation and Fish and Wildlife Service for water quality improvements. The trail abutments and ramp off of the bridge will come directly through that current detention basin that was unknown during the original scoping. And so through discussion with the consultants and with NDOT, we have a modification to the consultant agreement to include the services necessary to redesign the trail and the detention basin on the south end of the bridge to address that situation. And then secondly, there were a few different overlook locations along the bridge looking to the east downriver, but the specifics of that were not known when we wrote the original consultant agreement. We now have more detail on the structural work that will be necessary to install those overlooks down onto the river, and a small amount of that was also outside of the original scope that we had written with Shimmer. Shimmer provided the consultant work order to NDOT. Since the amount of the change of the contract was within management authority, we signed the consultant work order, allowing NDOT to give the notice to proceed because we didn't want to delay the progress on this project. So Shermer has been moving forward, but NDOT's official process requires an approval by the board and a resolution in order to authorize John to sign the amendment to the original agreement. And so the recommendation is that we authorize signing of the amendment to the original consultant agreement with Shermer. And the amount of the change is on the memo. I believe it's 14,000. Sorry.
829.
Yeah, 14,829 is the change from the original contract amount, which was $243,365. And so recommendation to authorize signing of the change to the original design contract with Shermer.
Thank you. Anyone from the public? Oh, first, we can have a motion on this item.
A motion for staff recommendation.
Second.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to this item? Directors? Roll call.
Waller?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sidinsky?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Dan Jefferson?
Aye. Thanks, Eric. You're up for the next one. Number nine, review and recommendation on Western Douglas County Trail construction of new pedestrian bridge agreement with Union Pacific Railroad. Do we need to go into executive session on this? No?
Not at this time.
Okay. Eric?
Western Douglas County Trail has been on the agenda numerous times. We have signed the construction contract with Graham, and we are working on preparing for the construction to begin in the spring. One final piece of right-of-way remains after we had completed the letting in October, and that was with the Union Pacific Railroad. NDOT worked with UP to develop and finalize the what's called the Construction of New Pedestrian Bridge Agreement, and this specifies responsibilities of the district during operations, during construction, operations, and maintenance of the bridge over the Union Pacific Railroad in the middle of running parallel to East Reichmuth, or the old highway in Valley. And if you can skip to the next page, I think the first page is the map. Yeah, so in the project map, you can see just above where it says insert map, that's where the trail bridge will cross over the existing tracks and the existing old highway. And in that location, an easement is necessary over the existing UP railroad tracks. So the agreement that we've received covers our responsibilities during and after construction of the project. We've had the agreement reviewed by legal counsel, and a summary of the responsibilities has been provided to staff. It's in line with what we expected during the design process. The agreement also provides, as an attachment for information, the documentation of the easements that we will purchase from Union Pacific. This is why it was listed as potentially an executive session item, because it discusses the cost of the easements. And so NDOT will carry out the steps necessary to finalize the easements and record those with Douglas County. And this is a little bit atypical. Generally, right-of-way items are addressed before the letting. But NDOT, in order to help keep this project moving forward on the schedule which we asked them to carry out, they wrote a PIL, P-I-L, which authorized them to carry out the letting in October, knowing that with a written pledge from UP, the right-of-way would be concluded by the end of 2020. We did receive this agreement in December of 2020, and the next step was to bring it here for official approval. And so the recommendation is to authorize two different actions. The first is for the general manager to sign the agreement with Union Pacific. And then the second is, upon signing the agreement, NDOT will work with Union Pacific on finalizing the easements and the purchase agreements, and then those purchase agreements will be sent to the districts to be finalized as well in order to acquire those two easements. And rather than come back a second time with essentially the same information, we recommend authorizing both the agreement with UP and then the subsequent purchase of the easements from UP with documents that will be provided by NDOT and then will be filed with Douglas County. And that's the recommendation today.
Okay, we have a motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Motion. Need a second?
Second.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Minsky?
Yes.
Peter?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Aye. That completes my report.
Call the FBL subcommittee to order. Location of the meeting act. I have before me the back wall is the posting of the meeting procedures. With that, quorum call.
Begley?
Here.
Bradley?
Here.
Conley?
Here.
McCarty?
Here.
Here. Adoption agenda.
Second.
Begley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
McCarty?
Yes.
Proof of publication of meeting notice, I do have it before me. Moving on to item six, recommendation of permanent easement for 108th and Giles Road improvements at WP2 with Sarpy County. Amanda? Good afternoon, Amanda.
Hi, good afternoon. Wyatt, can we start maybe with the big map? There you go. So this, before you for consideration tonight, is a permanent easement. And this is some property that we purchased about 3 years ago for the W2 flood control reservoir. And it's right where this circled area is here. We purchased this piece and this other piece from the Celebrity development as that was going on about 3 years ago. And then maybe, Wyatt, can you go to the colored map with the road? So we purchased that ahead of actually the construction of that project. So we have not started construction. We purchased the land ahead. And in the meantime, development is just going nuts out there, and there's development all around it. And so Sarpy County, through the Sarpy Connect project, has prioritized this 180th and Giles Road improvements. And so part of that is the reconstruction of 180th, and then right where is this, right in here, there'll be a culvert, a new culvert under the road, and so that requires a permanent easement from us, from the property that the NRD owns for WP2. But it's been coordinated. Sarpy County was part of the stakeholder group from early on in the preliminary design of the WP2 reservoir. So the culvert itself has all been coordinated, and this is just giving them the land to do that. It's all in the way upstream part of the reservoir, so it won't impact anything that the district has planned for the project. So it's really just dedicating that so they can make those improvements. If there's any questions, be happy to answer it.
Can we get a motion on the floor, please?
I move we go with staff recommendation.
Second.
Thank you. Any comments from the general public? Directors? Seeing none, roll call.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Yes. That concludes our agenda. We stand adjourned.
It's got to be a record for you. The shortest FBL.
Cut me some slack, will you?
Great, ad hoc. Okay. Ad hoc consultant. Ad hoc consultant selection subcommittee. January 12, 2091. Call to order. We got the Notification of Open Meetings Act posted on the board. Quorum call.
Here.
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
Hi, here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So move. Second.
Second. Roll call.
Begley?
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Chair?
Aye. Item number five, proof of publication. Have proof of publication of tonight's meeting. Item number six, review and recommendation of initial screening of proposals for consultant selection interviews. Eric Williams.
Six. Great. Mm-hmm. An RFP for the Beltline Trail was public on December 11th, and the district received 8 proposals in response. The trail is from roughly Military and Hamilton Street running northeast to 31st and Sprague, with an additional connection just north to the Transit Center on 31st Street. The proposals were received on January 7th, and they were provided to the ad hoc committee as well as the rest of the board members in a digital format. Glad to have discussion.
Jim?
You start with me? Okay. I carefully reviewed all of these. The first one I threw out was E&A because they use a plastic cover. I didn't throw them up because of that. But in our request, we say, don't use plastic covers. So we went from, this is an editorial. We went from this to JEO and Big Muddy. They stapled it together. So when I recycle these, this is a lot easier to recycle. That's the whole purpose. Anyways, it came down to two firms. But I'll include the third one in my analysis to even it out, I guess. We always use, would you prefer I go through why I didn't or the ones I did?
The ones you did.
The ones I did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Big Muddy in conjunction with JEO, great details on the approach, which I wouldn't accept anything less from either of those firms. I'm guessing that Big Muddy will take the lead, and JEO is there just for the structural and civil engineering aspect of it. There's no question on their design standards that they use. We talk about the Philco Trail, the South Omaha Trail that Big Muddy did. It's a natural for them. They did add about interpretive exhibits, and that's the only one of these that said it spiced it up a little bit on the trail. They also have just a 50 and 90% submission, which means it's pretty straightforward. It's not complicated. You'd think it was by some of these analyses, but really it's a trail. It's not building dams and all that heavier stuff. So they were, and of course the fact they included a picture of me and Eric. No, that didn't give me any extra points, but I got a kick out of that. Good proposal. Erhard Griffin, one thing that I highlighted of all of these, and it might, is Marty Schuker, RDG. When Marty's name popped up, to me that says tons. That says tons. Marty, if you don't know Marty Schuker, former planning director for the City of Omaha, went to work for RDG. Marty, when we were going to have a connectivity plan and an ad hoc committee for the Metron area, Marty was the first person I thought of to try and be part of that. By seeing him as part of this Beltline Trail, that gave me, I got excited to think that we could get Marty back involved in our trail than his commentary over the years. 20, 25 years, he's been very vocal about trails in Omaha. So their conjunction with RDG on that, to me, elevated them to one of the top two. Lots of experience with Eric Griffin. We just talked about the Western Sarpy Trail. So experience and good analysis. Example of the other states they used. In their work, they do have a great commitment to the NRD. Some of these that didn't make my cut, they're very generic presentations. I didn't feel any partnering, so to speak. I mean, they can all do it. Let's not kid ourselves. They're all good folks. They're professionals. But I just felt that with Erhard Griffin that. They know how we work. They're committed to the NRD, and that's a very, very much an intangible that I appreciated. Chairman Associates was my third. They're obviously doing a trail on the that we just voted on. Good project understanding, which I encourage those directors who did not get this, read the project understanding these guys. They repeat everything we think we know. But us directors sit here and, okay, what's this really project about? But I encourage you to read it because it puts it very much in perspective. They all did that. But I think they did a good job of identifying their project understanding, which we said, yeah, you got it, you got it. The generic ones probably didn't get it. They repeated, they talked to Eric, I'm sure, on the phone and so on. I don't know, and I didn't get this out of it, and if we do interview them, I'm not sure how much HDR is going to do on them, with them. One concern I have of them, not their expertise, but they list 21 people on the project. And I see 21 people on that project versus a more homegrown firm. I see dollar signs. you know, that's negotiated at the end, so to speak. But that caught my eye. My God, that's a lot of people. On one hand, it could be a real complex project, but it really isn't as complex as building a dam. So, but they elevated themselves above these others. So those are my rationale for these. So I'd recommend these top three if you want one, but certainly let's discuss it.
Any other discussion from any of the other committee members? Director Bradley?
I'm just an alternate, so I'm not a voting, I guess, this afternoon because all the committee members are here. I agree with Jim on with RDG. As I've looked through this, RDG was really stuck out for a lot of experience. I liked also, but number two was Lamp Reinerson. And number three was Benish, if I pronounced that right, correctly. I looked for in the proposals for what I saw, and I know what the Beltline Trail, many of the, well, parts of that trail will go over spots, parts that are 100 years old or more. And they have to be careful who they work with when they do that. Some of the other old firms, in their pictures of their trails that they constructed, it's like in rural areas or newer parts of the town, newer development. And that's not to say, you know, it's not easy, it's not hard, but compared to when you're going to work in the inner city to do this, you might have constrictions and easements and many things that you have to tackle and handle. So that's, and I was also looking at who their staff was and if anybody in the staff might have had, diversity. Seriously, any diversity and was disappointed, but in a sense, maybe that's just the science field. But for me, I thought RDG was number one, Lamp Reinerson and Benish. On Big Muddy, although, and not to say they're not, like Jim said, they could all do the job, but the experience I've had sitting beside Rich Teaser, not to throw you under the bus, but on many of these ad hoc committees, when Rich sees something like this that didn't have it in a binder and they didn't take time and they just put something and stapled it together, that drove Rich Teaser nuts. And not say, you know, say it that time. But I've heard that. I've heard him say that. And so I thought, well, not that that should throw Big Muddy in the back of the group. Maybe, you know, some more talk to me. They elevate. But again, I don't even vote on this tonight. So just an alternate, just sort of watching. Thank you.
Any other comments? Is there an interest in voting, interviewing three or four for this?
I think three is enough.
I guess we can have a recommendation then.
Jerry,
yes.
A couple points of clarification that came up actually after the RFP was posted.
Okay.
We are also working on the North Omaha Trail. I'm sorry. We are providing technical advice to the City of Omaha on the North Omaha Trail, which connects at 31st and Spring. So from the map, the way I can scroll to the map, which is in the RFP. The back few pages, there are two pages of maps, and the very north end of the location that's indicated in the RFP. Next map, please. There you go. The upper, the northeast end is shown in 31st and Sprague. I believe I talked with most of these firms on the phone, as you had indicated, and I did express all of them that the intention is, rather than stopping at the corner of 31st and Sprague, extends approximately one more block to the transit center on the east side of John A. Creighton Boulevard to across a city of Omaha-owned lot. The North Omaha Trail from the east, the existing Paxton Boulevard Trail from the west, and the Beltline Trail from the southwest, all meeting at the North Omaha Transit Center, has been a vision that we've worked with the city of Omaha and Metro Transit on for a number of years. So that's a slight adjustment, and I conveyed that to each of the firms that I've talked with during the process, and that was covered in most of the proposals. Secondly, the orange line that you see here is generally following the rail corridor, and based on some of the conceptual information from the study we had conducted in April of 2018, I conveyed to all of the firms who asked a slight adjustment in the expected route to follow on the north side. If you sort of scroll down just a little bit, the west side of Adams Park by King Elementary, and then turning and following the street on the north side of Adams Park is Bedford, down toward John A. Creighton, and then following John A. Creighton north, rather than following the actual railroad alignment from Bedford to Pratt Street. We believe that is probably the corridor that will be used. Most of the firms indicated they understand that something like an alternative alignment will be necessary. Alternative analysis for the alignment will be necessary, and so they had a good understanding of that as well. But those are just a few details that I wanted to make sure that were clarified to anyone who called and asked. And I think most of these firms did, and the ones that we've talked about had that information, and that's because that information changed after the time the RFP was posted, based on some additional input that we received. So I just wanted to make sure we were clear about that. The expected corridor follows Bedford down to Creighton, and then all the way up to the Transit Center, slightly different to the mountain.
Well, so the recommendation is that three firms be interviewed, Big Muddy, Workshop, Earhart Griffin and Associates, and Shimmer.
You want a motion? I'll give it to Tim.
Any comments?
The Tims? Anything to add? Larry or Danny?
Nope. One question for Eric, if I may. In the proposals, I see most of them have a timeline. Seems that Benoche was very clear about being aggressive at it, and I'm not sure where RDG was at, or you said Shimmer.
Mm-hmm.
Shimmer, they were into 23 before construction. So I thought maybe that was somewhat important that we should get things rolling. You know, perhaps they're a little too busy to take care of this. Was there any insight in that?
So if you look at the map again, particularly the north section, the area on the west side of Adams Park is a single piece of property owned by the land bank we work with. You can see King Elementary on the left, just above the letter A, and then the front continues up to Bedford. That's one single parcel, and it's adjacent to the City of Omaha Park right now. So we expect that single parcel from Maple up to Bedford would be a potential project that could be started on its own quite quickly. We conveyed that to the consultants that it is expected that rather than a single project, which would be preparing plans for final bidding and construction from start all the way to finish, much more likely we will have smaller pieces that might be able to move forward on different timelines based on the collaboration with community partners, City of Omaha, adjacent residents, and the land bank. So the piece on the west side of Adams Park is expected to be able to move very quickly, as you indicated, maybe potentially as soon as looking at construction in 2022. If you scroll to the other map, Wyatt, I believe we mentioned before that, there you go. So at Hamilton and Military, which is the orange letter A on this map, there are four parcels which run to the northeast up to Cater Street. Those four parcels, the Land Bank Board of Directors has approved a purchase agreement with another entity for some work in that area with a two-year timeline. That was about 1 year ago. That purchase agreement required a 30-foot rail corridor to be preserved from Hamilton to Decatur. We have attempted to talk with that other entity about their plans. We are unclear on what those plans are right now, but again, the purchase agreement does require the trail corridor to be preserved in that area. So it's possible that other design work in that area could impact the timeline there. We could be moving forward quickly with that section. Again, that could be Decatur down to connecting over to Olentville Elementary School. That would be a valuable project on its own as well. But that might be contingent on the timeline of an external design work that's going on. So I conveyed to all of the firms that I talked with that the timeline will probably be based on some early outreach meetings with property owners and the adjacent organizations who see the value of the trail. A little unclear on when exactly it would be. I do think that it's possible we could have something done moving in 2022. We have bid documents ready at the end of this year on some of the short pieces that could happen. I got the impression from most of the proposals that most of the design firms would be able to meet the schedule that we would be looking for. But you're right, waiting until 2023 is probably long. I mean, it could be the case, but we could be looking a little bit of that, depending on how soon some of the adjacent projects or adjacent owners might want to see things go forward.
All right, thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Director,
go ahead.
Jim, were you happy that Earhart Griffin's cover on their proposal?
You mean Big Muddy? Oh, Eric Griffin?
Yeah.
Yeah, because this one's easy to strip off when
you recycle. You know why? Because they probably ripped us off on the Western Douglas County Trail for 12 years. That's not how they can afford to do a good one.
No, that's state of Nebraska and Union Pacific, so. Well, I've got Eric, there's a couple of these people. Matter of fact, it was
Snyder.
First thing we got to do is get our stakeholders together, and they said they'll do a website. Someone else said they'd do a website. I hope that's not the case. We're not intending to have a whole new website for this project, are we?
So the Program Science proposal, they showed an example of story map, which is a very easy GIS type of information to convey out to the public. It might be I would expect that to be an interaction tool that most engagement firms would use. So I don't think we're expecting something very large and comprehensive that takes a long time. More of it is just a web URL where interested stakeholders could get information. The Atlanta Beltline is a good example. They have a very comprehensive website that's way more than we need. But Sanderson proposal specifically shows reference to story map, which I do think would be a good way to engage the public. It could be done. FAQ showed us one during a Value Partnership meeting last week, and they can put them together in about a week. And so website, I think, is maybe the wrong term, but some web-based information for stakeholders. I do think that's something we should expect, and most of the firms that get it would be good.
Ideally, Utopia, yeah, that stuff is nice. When I sit here and think, okay, build a website, you know, I'm getting dollars. That's all negotiated, all professional services. But when I see those things, one and I are an interpreter, dollars. Okay, we don't need an interpreter in this project. I don't know which one that was. But, yeah, public engagement, a necessary part of this. How we do that, our own website should be used. We've got one. We're already paying for it. Paying someone to fix it and monitor it and maintain it. So if anything, it should be under our PAPUNRD.org for a couple of reasons. We're doing this. So people should come to us for the information on our website, connect it, link it, et cetera. But I think it's important to know that we have to continue to profess to folks that this is, you know, we are the PAPUNRD. And we exist, and we do things like this. So I don't want any other websites out there competing with ours. Guess what I'm saying? Public engagement, I think it's overblown. Some of these folks love it, and I don't just do charrettes and all that good stuff. Yeah, let's get real. You know, we have public meetings here twice a month, and we probably have more if we need to. I'm not saying we shouldn't, but let's not put our money and time and half a dozen people that we're paying money for from a consultant to sit around a room and wait for five people to come in. It's still an important mechanism to go through, but I look at it a little bit more practical. So,
to the point about the interpreter, I think Snyder specifically mentioned that because of the population in the area, right where Decatur Street is located, there's an urban farm location that is well, it's owned by City Sprouts but managed by an immigrant community. And so I think that there are a large number of people within walking distance of this location who might not have English as a first language. And so I think that communicating with them, particularly in that location, because they are currently utilizing a parcel that may be part of the corridor that we would look for on the trail, I don't think that's a completely unreasonable thing to say we might need to communicate in another language. But
I do. So we'll agree and disagree on that.
Yeah. Director Bradley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And listening to, again, Director Thompson, and he has good wisdom on what he brings. I've learned from him over the years. But I will say the public education aspect of it is very important. And, for example, the Army Corps of Engineers did a big mistake when they were putting that Dakota Access Pipeline through the Standing Rock Reservation, and they didn't engage with the local population like they should have, and it turned out to be one of the largest demonstrations ever known for indigenous community. I see his point to where perhaps with the NRD's website could be more proactive and more the main one for this, but certainly at some point I agree that I think we it'd be a mistake not to have the public access or website to, or if that's the right term, but for the, you know, to keep them interested. And maybe there was a lot of schools along that path, and I could maybe see, you know, the science teachers, maybe, you know, keeping them engaged and what's going on out there, and go to the website and show them, all right, here it comes, you know, and that might just exciting things make, but I think we should keep that part intact, and whoever in their proposals, cost effective, not just trying to drive up the cost of this, but certainly cost effective, but that can really advertise a good website at the same time. I think that's a good point.
Okay, we could have a motion.
I'd recommend Big Muddy, Eric Griffin, and Schemmer.
Motion.
Three interviews. Say that again.
Big Muddy Workshop, Eric Griffin, and Schemmer.
Someone want to second that?
I'll second.
Okay. Any more discussion on this item? Roll call.
We had mentioned 4 o'clock for the interviews. It says it might have 6:30. Is that correct? For the interviews. Does that change?
On the 18th?
I'm sorry, on February 4th, when would you like to conduct the interviews?
I assume 4 o'clock.
Yeah, that's
fine. 4 o'clock's fine.
So then, conduct interviews, alphabetic order, with Big Buddy, Eric Griffin, and Schemmer at 4 o'clock on February 4th.
Yeah.
Fowler?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Nickley?
Aye.
And the chair?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
That concludes discussion.
And Larry.